Open your ears. For which of you will stop the vent of hearing when loud rumor speaks? I, from the Orient to the drooping West, making the wind my post-horse, still unfold the axe commenced on this ball of earth. I run before King Harry's victory, who in a bloody field by Shrewsbury hath beaten down young Hotspur and his troops, quenching the flame of bold rebellion even with the rebels' blood. But what mean I to speak so true at first? My office is to noise abroad that Harry Monmouth fell under the wrath of noble Hotspur's sword, and that the king, before the Douglas rage, stooped his anointed head as low as death. This have I rumored through the peasant towns between that royal field of Shrewsbury and this worm-eaten hold of ragged stone, where Hotspur's father, old Northumberland, lies crafty sick. The posts come tiring on. And not a man of them brings other news than they have learnt of me. From rumor's tongues they bring smooth comforts false, worse than true wrongs.
What news, Lord Bardolph? Every minute now should be the father of some stratagem. Times are wild. Contention, like a horse full of high feeding, madly hath broke loose and bears down all before him.
Noble Earl, I bring you certain news from Shrewsbury.
Good and God will.
As good as heart can wish. The king is almost wounded to the death, and in the fortune of my lord, your son, Prince Harry, slain.
But how was this derived? Saw you the field? Came you from Shrewsbury?
I spake with one, my lord, that came from thence. A gentleman well-bred and of good name, who freely rendered me these news for true.
My lord, the gentleman, almost forspent with speed, stopped hard by me to breathe his bloodied horse. He asked the way to Chester, and of him I did demand what news from Shrewsbury. He told me that rebellion had bad luck, and that young Harry Percy's spur was cold.
My lord, I'll tell you what. If my young lord, your son, have not the day, upon mine honor, for a silken point, I'll give my barony, never talk of it.
My lord, I spake with one.
Speak not of that you do not know.
Yea, this man's brow, like to a title piece, foretells the nature of a tragic volume. Say, Morton, didst thou come from Shrewsbury?
I ran from Shrewsbury, my noble lord, where hateful death put on his ugliest mask to fright our party.
And how doth my son and brother? Thou tremblest. The whiteness in thy cheek is apter than thy tongue to tell thy errand.
Douglas is living, and your brother yet. But for my lord, your son.
Why, he is dead. See what a ready tongue suspicion hath.
I cannot think, my lord, your son is dead.
I am sorry I should force you to believe that which I would to God I had not seen. But these mine eyes saw him in bloody state, rendering faint quittance, wearied and out breath, to Harry Monmouth, whose swift wrath beat down the never daunted Percy to the earth, from whence with life he never more sprung up.
For this, I shall have time enough to mourn. In poison, there is physic. And these news having been well, that would have made me sick. Being sick, have in some measure made me well. Now bind my brows with iron and approach the ragged star that time and spite dare bring to frown upon the enraged Northumberland. Let heaven kiss earth! Let not nature's hand keep the wild flood confined. Let order die! And let this world no longer be a stage to feed contention in a lingering act, but let one spirit of the firstborn Cain reign in all bosoms, that each heart being set on bloody courses, the rude scene may end, and darkness be the barrier of the dead.
This strange passion doth you wrong, my lord. We all that are engaged to this loss knew that we ventured on such dangerous seas, that if we wrought out life, 'twas 10 to 1, And yet we ventured. For the gain proposed choked the respect of likely peril feared. And since we are o'erset, venture again. Come, we will all put forth body and goods.
It is more than time. And my most noble lord, I hear for certain and dare speak the truth. The gentle Archbishop of York is up with well-appointed powers, turns insurrection to religion. Supposed sincere and holy in his thoughts, he's followed both with body and with mind, and doth enlarge his rising with the blood of fair King Richard scraped from Pomfret stones, derives from heaven his quarrel and his cause, tells them he doth bestride a bleeding land gasping for life under great Bolingbroke, and more and less do flock to follow him.
I knew of this before, but to speak truth, this present grief had wiped it from my mind. Go in with me, and counsel every man the aptest way for safety and revenge.
Sirrah, you giant, what says the doctor to my water?
He says, sir, the water itself was a good, clean, healthy water. But for the party that owed it, it might have more diseases than he knew for.
Men of all sorts take a pride to gird at me. The brain of this foolish compounded clay man is not able to invent anything that tends to laughter more than I invent or is invented on me. I'm not only witty in myself, but the cause that wit is in other men. I do here walk before thee like a sow that hath overwhelmed all her litter but one. If the prince put thee into my service for any other reason than to set me off, then I've no judgment. Thou some mandrake. Thou'd fitter to be worn in my cap than to wait in my heels. What said Master Donaldson about the satin for my short cloak and my slops?
He says, sir, you should procure him better assurance than Bardolph. He would not take his band.
Who?
Nor yours. He liked not the security.
Hit a fellow, rascal, yea, forsooth, knave. To bear a gentleman in hand and then stand upon security. I'd sleep they'd put rat's bane in my mouth as often to stop it with security. Yeah, where is Bardolph?
He's gone into Smithfield to buy your worship a horse.
I bought him in Paul's. He'll buy me a horse in Smithfield. And I could get me but a wife in the stews. I were manned, horsed, and wives.
Here comes that nobleman that committed the prince for striking him about Bardolph.
Wait close. I will not see him.
What's he that goes there?
Falstaff, I please, your lordship.
He that was in question for the robbery?
He, my lord. But he has since done good service at Shrewsbury, and as I hear, is now going with some charge to the Lord John of Lancaster.
To York. Call him back again.
Sir John Falstaff.
Send him, I'm deaf.
You will have to speak louder. My master is deaf.
I'm sure he is, to the hearing of anything good. Go pluck him by the elbow. I must speak with him.
Sir John.
A young knave and begging? Is there not wars? Is there not employment?
Sir, my lord would speak with you.
Sir John Falstaff, a word with you.
Oh, my lord! God give your lordship good time of day. I'm glad to see your lordship abroad. I heard say your lordship was sick. I hope your lordship goes abroad by advice. Your lordship, though not clean past your youth, has had some smack of age and you were some relish of the saltness of time. And I most humbly beseech your lordship to have a reverent care of your health.
Sir John, I sent for you before your expedition to Shrewsbury.
And please, your lordship, I hear that his majesty has returned with some discomfort from Wales.
I talk not of his majesty. You would not come when I sent for you.
And I hear, moreover, that his highness has fallen into this same horse and apoplexy.
Well, God mend him. I pray you let me speak with you.
This apoplexy, as I take it, is a kind of lethargy, please, your lordship, a kind of sleeping in the blood, a horse and tingling.
What tell you me of it, be it as it is?
It hath its original from much grief from study and perturbation of the brain. I have read the course of his effects in Galen. It's a kind of deafness. Yes.
I think you are fallen into the disease. You hear not what I say to you.
Oh, very well, my lord, very well. Rather than please you, it's the disease of not listening.
the malady of not marking that I am troubled with all.
To punish you by the heels would amend the attention of your ears, and I care not if I do become your physician. I sent for you when there were matters against you for your life.
As I was then advised by my learned counsel, I did not come.
Well, the truth is, Sir John, you live in great infamy.
Oh, he that buckles him in my belt cannot live in less.
Your means are very slender, and your waist is great.
Well, I would it were otherwise. I would my means were greater and my waist slenderer.
You have misled the youthful prince.
The young prince hath misled me. I'm the fellow with the great belly, and he my dog.
Well, I am loath to gall a new healed wound. Your day's service at Shrewsbury hath a little gilded over your night's exploit at Gad's Hill. But since all is well, keep it so. You follow the young prince up and down like his ill angel.
Not so, my lord. You that are old, consider not the capacities of us that are young.
Will you set your name down in the scroll of youth that are written down old with all the characters of age? Have you not a moist eye, a dry hand, a yellow cheek, a white beard, a decreasing leg, an increasing belly? Is not your voice broken, your wind short, your chin double, your wit single, and every part about you blasted with antiquity? And yet, will you call yourself young? Fie, Sir John.
My lord, I was born at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon with a white head and something a round belly. For my voice, I've lost it with that hallooing and singing of anthems. The truth is, I'm only old in judgment and understanding. And he that'll caper with me for 1,000 marks... let him lend me the money and have at it. For the box of the ear that the prince gave you, he gave it like a rude prince, and you took it like a sensible lord. I've checked him for it, and the young lion repents. Well, marry, not in ashes and sackcloth, but in new silk and old sack.
Well, God send the prince a better companion.
Well, God send the companion a better prince. I cannot rid my hands of him.
Well, the king hath severed you. I hear you are going with Lord John of Lancaster against the Archbishop and the Earl of Northumberland.
Yea, I thank your pretty sweet wit for it. But look you, pray, all you that kiss my lady peace at home, that our armies meet not in a hot day. For by the Lord, I take the 2 shirts out with me, and I mean not to sweat extraordinarily. There's not a dangerous action can peep out his head, but I'm thrust upon it. I cannot last ever. But it was always yet the trick of our English nation, if they have a good thing, to make it too common. If you will needs say I'm an old man, you should give me rest. Would to God my name were not so terrible to the enemy as it is. I were better to be eaten to death with a rust than to be scoured to nothing with perpetual motion.
Well, be honest, and God bless your expedition.
Oh, will your lordship lend me £1,000 to furnish me forth?
Not a penny. Fare you well. Commend me to my cousin, Westmoreland.
If I do, fillip me with a 3-man beetle. Boy, what money's in my purse?
7 groats. Oh. And 2 pence.
Oh, I can get no remedy against this consumption of the purse. Borrowing only lingers and lingers it out, but the disease is incurable. Go, bear this letter to my Lord of Lancaster, this to the Prince, this to the Earl of Westmoreland. It is to old Mistress Ursula, whom I've weakly sworn to marry since I perceived the first white hair on my chin. About it, you know where to find me. Pox of this gout. Or a gout of this pox. For the one or the other plays the rogue with my great toe. Well, it is no matter if I do halt. I have the wars for my colour, and my pension shall seem the more reasonable. A good wit will make use of anything. I will turn diseases to commodity.
Thus have you heard our cause, and known our means. My most noble friends, I pray you all, speak plainly your opinions of our host.
Our present musters grow upon the file to 25,000 men of choice, and our supplies live largely in the hopes of Great Northumberland, whose bosom burns with an insensate fire of injuries.
The question, then, Lord Hastings, standeth thus. Whether our present 5,000 and 20,000 may hold up head without Northumberland.
With him, we may.
Aye, marry, there's the point. But if without him we be thought too feeble, my judgment is we should not step too far till we had his assistance by the hand. For in a theme so bloody-faced as this, conjecture, expectation, and surmise of aids incertain should not be admitted.
Very true, Lord Bardolph, for indeed, it was young Hotspur's case at Shrewsbury.
It was my lord who lined himself with hopes, eating the air and promise of supply, flattering himself in project of a power much smaller than the smallest of his thoughts. And so, with great imagination proper to madmen, led his powers to death, and winking, leapt into destruction.
But by your leave, it never yet did hurt to lay down likelihoods and forms of hope. I think we are a body strong enough, even as we are, to equal with the king.
What is the king but 5,000 and 20,000?
To us no more. Nay, not so much, Lord Bardolph. For his divisions, as the times do brawl, are in three heads. One power against the French and one against Glendower. Perforce the third must take up us. So is the unfirm king in three divided. And his coffers sound with hollow poverty and emptiness.
But he should draw his several strengths together and come against us in full puissance, need not be dreaded. Let us on and publish the occasion of our arms. The Commonwealth is sick of their own choice. Their over-greedy love hath surfeited. They that when Richard lived would have him die are now become enamored on his grave. Thou that threw'st dust upon his goodly head when through proud London he came sighing on after the admired heels of Bolingbroke.
Shall we go draw our numbers and set on?
We are time subjects and time bids. Be gone.